Swayambhuva Manu is completing his instructions to Dhruva Maharaj to tell him to stop killing all the dukkas, the yakshas. And he's explained in the verses that we heard yesterday, he's explained the position of the Lord. Why is he explained the position of the Lord in relationship to the living entities, in relationship to the material world? He's explained this because Dhruva, he's requesting Dhruva not to act in any other way other than for the pleasure of Krishna, of the Lord. So why should one please another? What is the motivation to please another? So Swayambhuva Manu is telling Dhruva why he should endeavor to please the Lord, and that is because he is the Lord. Whose Lord? He's your Lord. He's my Lord. He's everyone's Lord. He's the Lord of the entirety of the creation. And yet, while the entire material world rests upon him, and it is going by his energy, Maya Dakshena Prakriti, Siyate Satsaracharan, still, he is completely aloof. That's how powerful he is. He is doing everything, but indirectly. He's so powerful, he doesn't have to do the work himself. He's doing everything by his energies, Maya Adiaksha, under his supervision, under his glance, the material world is going on. Not that he's moving all the planets individually or anything like that. All is going on by his energy. So Manu has told Dhruva to surrender unto the Lord. Everyone is, all the demigods, everyone surrenders unto him. So you should surrender to him. You should act for his pleasure. Stop thinking of yourself as the center of what you would like to do, because it's pleasing to you as the center. No, you should put the Lord as the center. You are not the Lord. And in text 28, he explains, Manu explains, my dear Dhruva, at the age of only 5 years old, 5 years, you were very grievously afflicted by the words of your mother's co-wife. Who was that? What was her name? Saruchi. And you very boldly gave up the protection of your mother and went to the forest to engage in the yogic process for realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At the age of 5, you were so bold and determined. You placed yourself fully in the hands of the Lord even then. Thank you. So now you should give up your self-interest. Skoshi. You should give up your self-interest and with yourself as the center and again surrender to him. For his pleasure. So you went to the forest to engage in the yogic process for realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead at the age of 5. As a result of this, you have already achieved the topmost position in the three worlds. So see what the result was. Purport. We'll read half the purport. Manu was very proud that Dhruva Maharaj was one of the descendants in his family. Why? Because at the age of 5, of only 5 years, Dhruva began meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And within 6 months, he was able to see the Lord face to face. Factually, Dhruva Maharaj is the glory of the Manu dynasty, or the human family. So Manu is reminding Dhruva Maharaj of his position. Look what you've done. Now you surrender further. 29. My dear Dhruva, please, therefore, turn your attention to the Supreme Person. who is the infallible Brahman. Face the Supreme Personality of Godhead in your original position. Now, we have turned our back on Krishna. Krishna, bhule se, ji, forgetting Krishna. Abhimukh, vimukh. Krishna bhule se jeev, anadiya bahimukh. We have turned our back on Krishna. So now face Krishna. Turn your attention to him. And this is actually a big part of the message of the Krishna consciousness movement, that we should turn our attention to Krishna. How much should we turn our attention to Krishna? Constantly, continuously. And in what mood? Ahaitukiya patiyata. To satisfy him causelessly, with no other reason, with no other motive other than to please him. We should turn our attention fully to him. This is pure devotional service. And if one has such devotion, like, and determination and sincerity and strength of character like Dhruva Maharaj had, even though a boy, 5-6 years old, within 6 months he saw the Lord. Because of his sincerity. And not only that, he had material motives. He wasn't even pure yet. So turn to him. Face the Supreme Personality of Godhead in your original position. And thus by self-realization you will find this material differentiation to be merely flickering. Because now he's going to say, now look what you've done. You're killing all these yakshas, thinking that they have killed my brother. They are not my people. They are not my friends. They are my enemies. So this is on what level? Are the yakshas yakshas? No, because within every yaksha heart there is a soul. Within everybody there is a soul. So Kapila Muni has explained this in the end of the third canto as well, that this is one of the essential parts of the teachings of Krishna consciousness, that we cannot just put our consciousness on worshipping the Lord and neglect all the living entities who are part of the Lord. No, this is prakriti bhakti. This is materialistic, third class devotion. Almost, it's basically materialistic. So more advanced is to not only worship the Lord, but to also note that pandita samadarshana, that in every living entity's heart the Lord is also there, and that there is a soul there, and see the equality and give up the material differentiation, which is after all flickering, temporary. So now this person is a friend in one situation, and then he dies. There's one story that Prabhupada once told about, there was a very, very wealthy man. And he had a big, big house with his many, many sons. So wealthy. And then he died. And then he took it, because he was attached to that area of town, he took his next birth as a cobbler, a mucchi, a cobbler in the same area. And then one day the cobbler was knocked on the door of the house, of that same house. This was who he was. He was the master of that house years before. Now his sons had grown up. The cobbler knocked on the door, and one of the sons, and the cobbler was him. He had taken his birth. So one of the sons picked up his shoes and hit him. Go away. We don't want to. Go away. Same soul, different circumstances. So to see the material distinction without seeing the soul, the true equality of all living entities, seeing how Krishna sees, how a pandit, a wise person sees, is illusion. And we see how everyone is being conducted by that illusion, and people are killing each other all over the world because you have a different type of a family, a different type of a race, a different type of religious belief, Therefore, and in the past, your forefathers have killed my forefathers, and my forefathers have killed your forefathers. So we'll kill each other on and on and on. And they take change one generation because they're thinking of their enemy so intensely. They become that. Things like that. So how horrible is this material consciousness? Because it makes friends and enemies. So Prabhupada explains in his purport, just a little bit down. When living entities are viewed in the bodily concept of life, one appears to be different from another. Lord Manu wanted to change the vision of Dhruva Maharaj, who was looking upon the yakshas as different from him, or as his enemies, because he wanted to stop him from killing him, so he's giving him a higher vision. Factually, no one is an enemy or a friend. Everyone is passing through different types of bodies under the law of karma. But as soon as one is situated in his spiritual identity, he does not see differentiation in terms of this law. Of course, he sees practically. He sees that there's a soul in a tiger's body, but he doesn't treat a tiger the same as he treats a human. He acts practically, but his vision, based on spiritual knowledge, is very, very high. In other words, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochati Nakamchati Samasavesu Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labhate Param. A devotee who is already liberated does not see differentiation in terms of the outward body. He sees all living entities as spirit souls, eternal servants of the Lord. Dhruva Maharaj was advised by Lord Manu to see with that vision. He was specifically advised to do so because he was a great devotee and should not have looked upon other living entities with ordinary vision. Indirectly, Manu pointed out to Dhruva Maharaj that Dhruva Maharaj, out of material affection, thought of his brother as his kith and as his kin, and the yakshas as his enemies. Such observation of differentiation subsides as soon as one is situated in his original position as eternal servant of the Lord. So Manu continues. Thus regaining your natural position, which is surrendered to Krishna, and rendering service unto the Supreme Lord, who is the all-powerful reservoir of all pleasure, and who lives in all living entities as the Supersoul, you will very soon forget the illusory understanding of I and mine. My dear King Dhruva, just consider what I have said to you, which will act as medicinal treatment upon disease. Control your anger, for anger is the foremost enemy on the path of spiritual realization. I wish all good fortune to you. Please follow my instruction. So take this knowledge, and what stops us from acting in knowledge? Our anger, which is based on kama esha koda esha rajaguna samudbhava. Our desires, material desires, either cause, if we're successfully fulfilled, we become greedy. And if we're unsuccessful in fulfilling our desires, what happens? Become angry. So this is due to material desires. And Manu is explaining how to cut this. How to cut this. Because this anger, he's saying, is the foremost enemy on the path of spiritual realization. Foremost enemy. Very, very strong words. Purport. But Dhruva Maharaj was a liberated soul, and actually he was not angry with anyone. But because he was the ruler, it was his duty to become angry for some time in order to keep law and order in the state. So sometimes Krishna was trying to make Arjuna angry in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, because without some anger you can't fight properly. You have to think of... So Krishna was pushing him in that way. His brother Uttama was without fault, so Dhruva Maharaj had, as the king, he had to become somewhat angry. Uttama was at fault, yet he was killed by one of the yakshas. It was the duty of Dhruva Maharaj to kill the offender, life for life, because Dhruva was the king. So according to our duty, we have different responsibilities. When the challenge came, Dhruva Maharaj fought vehemently and punished the yaksha sufficiently. But anger is such that if one increases it, it increases unlimitedly. In order that Dhruva Maharaj's kingly anger not exceed the limit, Manu was kind enough to check his grandson. What is one not capable of doing in anger? If one is angry enough, and one can do anything, anything, any abominable thing. Kill so many people. Kill oneself. Punch a wall. Punch the door. Put the hand through a window. Angry driving. Run into something. Insanity of anger. It makes one crazy. So therefore, check it, he said. A little bit was required dutifully, but if you let it get out of control, and that's the nature of anger, it tends to get out of control and causes great trouble. So Manu was stopping it. So Dhruva could understand the purpose of his grandfather, and he immediately stopped the fighting. The word Srutena Bhuyasya in the verse means by constantly hearing. These words are very important in this verse. By constantly hearing about devotional service, one can check the force of anger, which is detrimental to the process of devotional service. Srila Parikshit Maharaj said that the constant hearing of the pastimes of the Lord is the panacea for all material diseases. What does panacea mean? Yeah. Go ahead, remedy. You were going to say remedy also? Yeah, it's a cure-all. Panacea means it cures all diseases. So it's the cure-all for all material diseases. So what is it? The cure-all? But not only hearing, but hearing constantly. Hearing, chanting, remembering constantly, always. Then whatever material diseases we have, if we can somehow or another always remember Krishna and never forget Him, either by hearing about Him or speaking about Him or remembering Him or chanting His glories, then the material world will not touch us. We will be free. Everyone, therefore, should hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead constantly. By hearing, one can always remain in equilibrium, keep in perspective of what life is really for. And if we don't hear, on the other hand, our mind will drift away under the control of goodness, passion, and ignorance, with ourselves at the center, and we will cause trouble for ourselves. By hearing, one can always remain in equilibrium, and thus his progress in spiritual life will not be hampered. Dhruva Maharaj's becoming angry with the miscreants was quite appropriate. There is a short story in this connection about a snake who was a cobra. Raise your hand if you've seen a cobra in your life. Where have you seen a cobra? Where did you see a cobra? In a hovelum. Big cobra? Small cobra? How long? Huh? They're the most poisonous, the black ones. The black ones, you know that? The smaller cobra is, the more poisonous, especially the black ones are very angry. Sometimes they'll chase you, other ones, the other snakes, so they'll leave you alone, especially the black cobra and the small ones. Did he bite you and kill you? I'm sorry to hear that. Please accept my condolences. But in any case, there's a short story illustrating why Dhruva Maharaj, it was good that he became angry, but too much was not good. So there's a short story in this connection about a snake who became a devotee upon instruction of Narada. Narada instructed him not to bite anymore. Since ordinarily a snake's business is to fatally bite other living entities, as a devotee he was forbidden to do so. Unfortunately, people took advantage of this non-violence on the part of the snake, especially the children, who began to throw stones at him. He did not bite anyone, however, because it was the instruction of his spiritual master. After a while, when the snake met his spiritual master, Narada, he complained, "I've given up the bad habit of biting innocent living entities, but they are mistreating me by throwing stones at me." Upon hearing this, Narada Muni instructed him, "Don't bite, but do not forget to expand your hood as if you were going to bite. Then they will go away." Similarly, a devotee is always nonviolent. He is qualified with all good characteristics. But in the common world, when there is mischief made by others, he should not forget to become angry, at least for the time being, in order to drive away the miscreants. So sometimes one has to expand one's hoods. That's what cobras do. They go like this, as if they're going to strike, and this part expands. And then people run, they become fearful. So if the king becomes a pacifist, a liberal, then the miscreants, the criminal element in society will take advantage and they'll do horrible things. So therefore the king's duty is to become angry. So text 32, this Manu continues instructing Dhruva about anger. "A person who desires liberation from this material world should not fall under the control of anger, because when bewildered by anger, one becomes a source of dread for all others." Srila Prabhupada's purpose. "A devotee or saintly person should not be dreadful to others, nor should anyone be a source of dread to him. If one treats others with non-enmity, then no one will become his enemy. There is the example, however, of Jesus Christ, who had enemies." So generally, if we treat people nicely, they'll treat us nicely. "But there is the example, however, of Jesus Christ, who had enemies, and they crucified him. The demonic are always present, and they find fault even in saintly persons. But a saintly person never becomes angry, even if there is very great provocation." My dear Dhruva, you thought that the Yakshas killed your brother, and therefore you have killed great numbers of them. But by this action, you have agitated the mind of Lord Shiva's brother, Kuvera, who is the treasurer of the demigods. Please note that your actions have been very disrespectful to Kuvera and Lord Shiva. For this reason, my son, you should immediately pacify Kuvera with gentle words and prayers, and thus his wrath may not affect our family." Short purport. In our common dealings, we should maintain friendship with everyone, and certainly with such exalted demigods as Kuvera. Our behavior should be such that no one should become angry and thereby commit a wrong to individuals, families, or societies. And the final verse in the chapter. "Thus Swayambhuva Manu, after giving instructions to Dhruva Maharaj, his grandson, received respectful obeisances from him. Then Lord Manu and the great sages went back to their respective homes." So Maitreya continued narrating this, what happened next to Vidura. He said, "My dear Vidura, Dhruva Maharaj, his anger subsided, it went away, and he completely ceased killing yakshas. When Kuvera, the most blessed master of the treasury, learned this news, he appeared before Dhruva. While being worshipped by yakshas, kanaras, and charanas, he spoke to Dhruva Maharaj, who stood before him with folded hands." So Kuvera came before Dhruva. Now, was he angry or was he happy? He was pleased, actually, with Dhruva, who stood before him with folded hands. Kuvera said, O sinless son of a Kshatriya, I am very glad to know that under the instructions of your grandfather you have given up your enmity. Although it is very difficult to avoid, I am very pleased with you. Actually, you have not killed the Yakshas, nor have they killed your brother. For the ultimate cause of generation and annihilation is the eternal time feature of the Supreme Lord. So previously Manu said, who has killed your brother? Ultimately it's the Supreme Lord, because he's the cause of everything. So Kuvera, in a forgiving way, says, he adds something to that, that not only have the Yaksha not killed your brother, that was ultimately Krishna's sanction. He is the permitter of everything. Anumanta. Upadrashta Anumanta cha bhakta bhakta maheshwara. But not only that, but you have not killed these Yakshas either. Because you are not the one who's doing it, their time ran out, basically speaking. So Kuvera did not want, because Dhruva gave up his anger, Kuvera therefore gave up his anger. Because of Dhruva's equanimity, then Kuvera also was philosophical and spoke and took away any guilt from Dhruva Maharaj that he may be feeling that he had done the wrong thing. Purport. When the master of the treasury addressed him as sinless, Dhruva Maharaj, considering himself responsible for killing so many Yakshas, might have thought himself otherwise. Kuvera, however, assured him that factually he had not killed any of the Yakshas, therefore he was not at all sinful. He did his duty as a king, as is ordered by the laws of nature. Nor should you think that your brother was killed by the Yakshas, said Kuvera. He died or was killed in due course of time by the laws of nature. Eternal time, one of the features of the Lord, is ultimately responsible for annihilation and generation. You are not responsible for such actions. So now he's going to speak about, Kuvera is going to preach also to Dhruva Maharaj. He says, misidentification of oneself and others as I or you on the basis of the bodily concept of life is a product of ignorance. So this isn't how we should think. This bodily concept is the cause of repeated birth and death. So Manu has explained the same thing, and now Kuvera is explaining it. Because if we think in terms of the body, we are forced into the cycle of birth and death, and it makes us go continuously in material existence. My dear Dhruva, come forward. May the Lord always grace you with good fortune. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is beyond our sensory perception, is the supersoul of all living entities. And thus all entities are one without distinction. Begin therefore to render service unto the transcendental form of the Lord, who is the ultimate shelter of all living entities. What's that sound? Huh? It's what? Okay. So certainly there are distinctions between living entities. The distinctions between living entities are on the physical platform and also on the spiritual platform. We're individuals. So there must be, and if we look around the room, there's no two persons who are exactly the same in any way. From dress to the length of the nose to this or that skin color. There are common elements, hair, whatever. There are common elements, but there are uncommon elements because we're all individuals. There are divergent elements. But yet, there is common elements on the material platform and there's common elements on the spiritual platform. The spiritual platform, the main common element is that we are all servants of Krishna. This is the vision of a devotee. One time someone asked Prabhupada, how many devotees, disciples do you have? Or how many devotees are there? And he said, unlimited. But some know it and some don't. So everyone, Jivera, Sarubhoi, Krishna Nityadas, we are all, every living entity, regardless of the external distinctions or even the spiritual distinctions of individuality, everyone is a servant of Krishna. So everyone has a relationship with Krishna, and therefore we have a relationship with everyone through Krishna. So therefore Kuvera says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is beyond our sensory perception, is the supersoul of all living entities. And thus all living entities are one without distinction, in the sense that everyone has a relationship with Krishna as a servant. So there is no distinction of between living entities on that. It's not that some living entities are servants of God and others aren't. So in that sense, there is no distinction between living entities. Everyone is a servant of God. So therefore, give up that vision that makes the yakshas your enemies. You've done this. And this is laudable. It is wonderful. And therefore, since every living entity, including you, is a servant of Krishna, begin therefore to render service unto the transcendental form of the Lord, who is the ultimate shelter of all living entities. Therefore, serve Krishna. Engage yourself fully, therefore, in His devotional service. For only He can deliver us from this entanglement of materialistic existence. Although the Lord is attached to His material potency, He is aloof from her activities. It's the Lord's, the material world that makes everything go on, even the illusory energy and the material energy that also Swayambhuva Manu spoke about this. It is all coming from Krishna, so He is connected. It is not detached from Him. It is not independent of Him. It is attached to Him. So He is attached to the material energy, or it is attached to Him. But yet He is aloof from the activities of the material energy. He is aloof, separate. This is the inconceivable relationship between the Lord and His energy. Everything goes on by His grace, but He is separate, and He is not directly connected to the material energy. Everything in this material world is happening by the inconceivable potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we'll read some of this purport. Another significant feature in this verse is that only the Lord and no one else is to be served. That is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Mame Kam Sharanam Braja. There is no need to serve the demigods, who are just like the hands and legs of the Supreme Lord. When the Supreme Lord is served, the hands and legs of the Supreme Lord are automatically served. There is no need of separate service. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Tesham Aham Samudarta Mrityu Samsara Sagarat. This means that the Lord, in order to show specific favor to the devotee, directs the devotee from within. In such a way that he is ultimately delivered from the entanglement of material existence. That verse describes from the Bhagavad Gita how Krishna Himself personally delivers the living entity who serves Him with devotion from the ocean of material existence. And the material world is compared to an ocean. Why? Because it is so vast that no matter how expert one is in swimming the ocean, one cannot swim. If one is dropped into the middle of the ocean, he is doomed. So similarly, no matter how good we are at manipulating the material energy, or how intelligent we are, if we're in the ocean of the material world, we are doomed. So Krishna personally will come to His devotee and pluck him out of the ocean of material world. No one but the Supreme Lord can help the living entity be delivered from the entanglement of this material world. The material energy is a manifestation of one of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's various potencies. This material energy is one of the Lord's potencies, as much as heat and light are potencies of fire. The material energy is not different from the Supreme Godhead, but at the same time he has nothing to do with the material energy. The living entity who is of the marginal energy is entrapped by the material energy on the basis of his desire to lord it over this material world. And then again, the basis is that desire. And if we're successful, we become greedy. And if we're unsuccessful, we become angry. But we're in the material world by the virtue of that desire and our anger and our greed. But the Lord is aloof from this. But when the same living entity engages himself in the service of the Lord, then he becomes attached to this service. So because of our desire to lord it over the material world, we're entangled. And when we become, because Krishna is unentangled, if we become attached to serving Krishna, giving up the desire to lord it over the material world, to act as if we were the master of the material world, the center of the material world, the pivotal point that everything must go around, give up that illusion, and that situation is called yuktam, or attachment. That is proper attachment. For devotees, the Lord is present even in the material energy. This is the inconceivable potency of the Lord. Material energy acts in the three modes of material qualities which produce the actions and reactions of the material world. Those who are not devotees become involved in such activities, whereas devotees who are dovetailed with the Supreme Personality of Godhead are freed from such action and reaction of the material energy. My dear Dhruva Maharaj, son of Maharaj Uttanapad, we have heard that you are constantly engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known for his lotus navel. You are therefore worthy to take all benedictions from us. Please, therefore, ask without hesitation whatever benediction you want from me. So it's interesting that that Manu said, you please the Lord and all good fortune will come to you. So by pleasing the Lord, what has happened is the good fortune has come through whom? Through Kuvera. Because Kuvera is... So Krishna acts directly through his devotees. And Kuvera is saying, whatever you want, he's giving him that benediction. Whatever you want, I will give you. Because you are a devotee. Whatever you want. Now just imagine if such a powerful person, because Kuvera is the treasurer of the demigods, so he has unlimited wealth. So what would we ask for if that treasurer said, I will give you whatever you want? And here's what Dhruva Maharaj replied. He said, Saraja Rajena Varaya Chodito Dhruvo Maha Bhagavato Mahamati. Mahamati means because of his great intelligence. This is what he asked for. Harao Savavre Chalalitam Shritim Yaya Tiratyayatnena Duratyayam Tama. When thus asked to accept a benediction from Kuvera, the Yaksharaj, the king of the Yakshas, Dhruva Maharaj, that most elevated pure devotee, who is an intelligent and thoughtful king, he begged that he might have unflinching faith in and remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For thus a person can cross over the ocean of nations very easily, although it is very difficult for others to cross. So what did he ask for? Full faith and remembrance of the Lord, because that would get him out of the world. See how his consciousness has changed. In the beginning, what benediction was he looking for? He wanted a kingdom. He's learned his lesson. He doesn't want that. He wants to remember Krishna constantly. And he knows that that will take him out of the material world, and even better than out of the material world, it will take him to Krishna's lotus feet. So this truly is the essence of all benedictions. To remember Krishna with great devotion and great faith, remembering the form, the pastimes, the qualities, all the different activities of Krishna, be absorbed in that. If we become absorbed in that, truly we will always be associating with Krishna. And then, whether we live or die, whether we're on this planet, in a hellish planet, or in a heavenly planet, apitu yarta darshanam, they will all be equal because we will be with Krishna. Therefore, this is the goal. And Dhruva Maharaj so intelligently asked for the benediction of that. Constant, faithful, fixed remembrance of Krishna with great devotion. And it's not possible to do it without great devotion. Here is Prabhupada's purport. And this will probably end after this. Or maybe one more. According to the opinion of expert followers of Vedic rites, there are different types of benedictions in terms of religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. These four principles are known as chaturvargas. Of all the chaturvargas, or the four types of benedictions, the benediction of liberation is considered to be the highest in this material world. To be enabled to cross over material nescience is known as the highest purushartha, or benediction for a human being. But Dhruva Maharaj wanted a benediction which surpasses even the highest purusharta, liberation. He wanted the benediction that he might constantly remember the lotus feet of the Lord. This stage of life is called Panchama Purusharta. When a devotee comes to the platform of Panchama Purusharta, simply engaging in devotional service to the Lord, the fourth purushartha, the liberation, becomes very insignificant in his eyes. Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati has stated in this connection that for a devotee, liberation is a hellish condition of life. As for sense gratification, which is available in the heavenly planets, the devotee considers it to be a will-o'-the-wisp, having no value, an illusion, having no value in life. Yogis endeavor to control the senses, but for a devotee, controlling the senses is no difficulty at all. The senses are compared to serpents, but for a devotee, the serpent's poisoned teeth are broken. Thus, Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati has analyzed all kinds of benedictions available in this world, and he has clearly declared that for a pure devotee, they are all of no significance. So, that was the benediction that Dhruva wanted, to always be fixed. And this is after he was the king. So he had already experienced what kingly life was. He had gotten his desire to become the king. And now he learned much better than that, is to be fixed, to be associating with Krishna by the process of constantly remembering him. Okay, we'll stop here. Any questions or comments? Yeah.
What does it mean, constantly hearing, practically?
Well, what is hearing? The Sanskrit.
I'm not sure.
Shravanam, usually. So we should hear about Krishna. The word is Nitya Bhagavata Sevanam. Nitya means constantly or eternally, but it also means regularly. So we should regularly hear about Krishna, but we should be constantly engaged in something. Our consciousness should be constantly engaged in something connected with Krishna. That is perfect. So therefore Krishna explains, Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakto. Engage your mind on me and become my devotee. So somehow or another we should engage our consciousness in Krishna's service. This is the most wonderful thing. So hearing is the prime method of doing that, because how will we focus our consciousness on Krishna unless we hear about Krishna? We won't even know that we're supposed to do it. And what will we think about Krishna if we don't hear about him? So there are so many books. Krishna specifically came to perform wonderful childhood pastimes in Vrindavan, especially to give our mind something to think about. Also Dhruva Maharaj, wonderful pastimes, but especially Krishna himself came to perform these wonderful Vrindavan Leela pastimes so we can focus our consciousness on Krishna. This is the perfection. So before we can do that, we have to hear about Krishna. So at least we should regularly hear about Krishna. Great devotees like Prakrit Maharaj, for 7 days straight he basically just heard that. We'd say it was constantly. Possible for someone who is completely pure, he has no passion or ignorance or anything in his heart except purity, sattva, pseudo-sattva. So we have to work because we have passion and we have ignorance, so we have to work. So our work should be somehow or another connected to Krishna, and we should work hard for Krishna. But unless we hear sufficiently, we won't be able to do that. We won't be able to work hard for Krishna. We'll end up working hard for ourselves and becoming entangled in the material world. So hearing, the Shravana is the basis of everything. Hearing. And we'll hear later how Prabhupada explains. Later he talked about the ISKCON standard of morning and evening hearing, at least that. Any other questions or comments?
I was just thinking that constant hearing means such a taste for hearing about Krishna that you can't
hear. Yeah. The residents of Vrindavan, they would constantly hear about Krishna or think about Krishna. When they would get together, they would talk about Krishna.
Seems that maybe we just work for Krishna. Maybe we hear about Krishna one, half an hour in the morning, half an hour in the morning.
But that should change. Because that we should, not that we shouldn't work for Krishna, but we should be really working for Krishna with the mind. Manmana, engage your mind on me, Baba Madhbhakti, and become my devotee. So this is actually described in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita in Chaitasya Savakamani Maya Sanyasmatpada. That while engaging in Krishna's service, while working for Krishna, we should think that I'm doing this for Krishna, basically. Then the service becomes a devotional offering to Krishna. It's based on the internal. But if we do things externally, that will also be helpful. But eventually, we have to come to the point where it seeps down to the internal. Otherwise, it's very dissatisfying. Because work in and of itself isn't satisfying. You want to gain something. So what is truly to be gained? It's Krishna consciousness, Krishna Krishna bhakti rasa bhavatomati kriyatam yadi kuti tilabhyate tataloyam apimuyam ekalam janmakoti sukrite nalabhyate. This is what's to be gained. And if one somehow or another gets a taste for this, he's very fortunate. And it's hard. It's hard because the mind is so active, or so means it tends towards the mode of passion or the mode of ignorance. So by the process of hearing and chanting and working hard for Krishna, then it becomes purified and our taste increases if we don't commit offenses. So saddhyam bhava janme, if we're intelligent and don't commit offenses, then gradually love will come through the process of hearing Bhagavatam and the other processes. Any other questions or comments? Here is where? The point that Prabhupada is making in the purport offer the Mahamati is that Dhruva didn't ask for anything material. That was his intelligence. His desire was on the spiritual platform. That's what he asked from Kuvera. So that intelligent we should be. To be able to always remember Krishna deeply is not a matter of intelligence. It's a matter of advancement, which is more than intelligence. That's a matter of developing some taste. So we should know that that's our goal. We should know that very clearly. We should see that, how far we are from that, and we should, that's a proper reason to lament. And we should move forward. Try to chant good rounds, try to hear, try to chant Hare Krishna and Kirtan, serve, preach, worship the deity with devotion, associate with the devotees nicely, work hard for Krishna, etc., etc. The whole, not be friendly with everyone, not make people angry at us, as he said. Do our duties properly, etc.
In verse 6, he said that all living entities are that, and thus all entities are one without distinction.
Yeah.
Usually,
that's why. That's why I took quite a bit of time to explain that. What should we see as common or not distinct among living entities? And that's that everyone, there's two basic things: that we are qualitatively the spiritual, qualitatively the same as Krishna and as the same as each other, and also that everyone is a servant of Krishna. But there are obviously distinctions as well, but this is the point that's being talked about. This, instead of seeing them according to their material physical distinctions, should see that they're servants of Krishna. So then if you see everyone is a servant of Krishna, even if someone is unconscious of Krishna, how could you become it? You can become disturbed with them on one level, but you can't want to kill them and hate them. Because then you just see that it's just they're servants of Krishna, but the power of Maya has bewildered them. So that type of vision is very pure and advanced. So it doesn't mean that there are no distinctions. It means on that level, on that frame of reference, there is a commonality of all living entities. There's, in addition to that, there are distinctions on the physical level, obviously, but he's saying don't see on the physical level. But also there's distinctions on the spiritual level too, because we're all individuals. But he's not talking about that point right now. He's talking about the commonality between all. And those are the two basic points of commonality. So these points have been explained in some of the purports. So the basic two points of commonality are that we are all Krishna's servants and we're spiritual. We're eternally Krishna's servants, is really, although we're individuals. So this will be explained later as well.
Are you strengthening the aspect of the oneness between?
Because right now, Dhruva was seeing before the duality. My brother was my friend, and you, because you killed him, you're all my enemies. So therefore, I'm going to kill you.
He's fighting with them.
So
he's fighting with them. He's obviously.
Yeah. But now because he's preaching to him, I don't see it like that. You know, does anyone know what the saying of the three musketeers were? Was it the three musketeers? What was their saying? Yes. So all for one. And that one is Krishna. And one for all. And who is the all? The all is Krishna also. Because he's everything. But if all the living entities are for that one, then it's like watering the root of the tree, then they also become nourished. So that is the true nourishment that the heart is seeking. Being all for that one, for Krishna, the Supreme Absolute Truth. And that benefits all as well. Not to act independently. So this is not easy. It's easy to talk about, but it's not easy to do, to give up that independent spirit. We don't even want to give it up. That's the main problem. So as we hear about Krishna, that's why hearing is so important and chanting. Because by hearing about Krishna, the desire and associating with devotees and chanting, the desire becomes stronger. We realize that when we give up, what are we giving up? We're giving up nothing. And what are we gaining? We're gaining everything. We have to get that taste. And if we don't get that taste, like Dhruva, he was offered everything, anything in the material world. Practically speaking, by Kuvera, and he focused. What do I want? I want to remember Krishna faithfully, always as I serve him. So a very deep realization, and his realization was born of experience, because he was the king. He knew. He knew what it was like to have the whole world at your beck and call.
Could Kuvera really give him that?
What?
What he asked for.
Huh? Well, if he's Mahamati, huh? Yeah, Yeah, good point. But it. Anyway, he asked him, "What do you want?" And he told him, "This is what I want."
Let's see if... And didn't he already have it?
But the nature of devotion is that no matter what you have, you don't think it's sufficient. It's anandam buddhivardhanam pratipatam. Lord Kuvera said to Dhruva Maharaj that he heard that Dhruva was always in samadhi or thinking of the lotus feet of the Lord. In other words, he knew that for Dhruva Maharaj there is nothing desirable within the three material worlds. He knew that Dhruva would ask for nothing but to remember the lotus feet of the Lord constantly. Let's read the. Oh, it's too late, really. But the next purport talks a little about that. But it says, a Vaishnava is always respectful to everyone. Just imagine. So when Kuvera offered him a benediction, he did not refuse it. But he wanted something that would be favorable in his advancement in Krishna consciousness. So just imagine if he said, I'll offer you anything you want, whatever you want. And he said, you. You can't give me what I want. You're a demigod. I want Krishna consciousness. So, because he's going there inspired by Krishna, ultimately he's inspired by Krishna. So Krishna acts in his own way. He can...
Could it also be seen that it was the standard of exchange between such exalted and fine persons to display the other person's to taste and display the other person's exalted character by their doings?
That's what we're talking about by Leela, really. Good questions. Good points. Turning. Oh, some really... The purports, they move a little away now from philosophy, because there's been quite a bit of philosophy. Very interesting. The next chapter, no, later on. Now we're in the chapter entitled Dhruva Maharaj Goes Back to Godhead. So he's going home. So interesting purports. See, Dhruva Maharaj ki jai, Jitabhropad ki jai.